All right, everyone, welcome to Higher Connections. I always try to guess the number of the episode, but I'm always wrong. I'm an accountant, so I'm not good with numbers. I think we're somewhere close to number 20 here. We're about a week from 420, which is pretty cool. I will be celebrating working. Hopefully you all listening have some funner plans for 420, but this is going to be a cool episode. We are joined by Reggie, and he has a very similar story to me in a way. He's anonymous, so Reggie is not his real name. He kind of transitioned from alcohol to psychedelics / weed at some point. We're going to get into his story a little bit, which is very similar to, obviously, anyone that's listened to this, to my story. And so, you know, I'm really excited to kind of get into how Reggie's life has hopefully gotten better since the transition, but I'm sure we'll hear more about it. He is based in the southern part of the United States, but again, has decided to remain anonymous. So, Reggie, welcome to Higher Connections. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Eric. Happy to be here.
So, you know, I guess why don't we just get into kind of a little bit of your story? You seem like a younger version of myself here. I don't want to give away my age. Let's just say I'm early 40s, and, you know, kind of transitioned from alcohol to marijuana within the past few years. But, you know, would love to just to hear kind of what your journey's been and, you know, kind of why you decided to transition from alcohol to, you know, the psychedelics or the things that you're doing now. So why don't you give us a little bit of background on yourself and kind of your story?
Yeah, sure. So I actually have never been super into alcohol, and I would drink like in college and stuff like that, and afterwards just casually with friends. But a big thing for me, let me back up a bit. Weed was actually the first drug that I ever tried, like before I even drank alcohol ever. So I was always had this kind of taboo against alcohol, just like culturally with like my family and a lot of my friends. They thought alcohol was really bad. And it was also just kind of hard to get your hands on whenever you're underage. And so I smoked weed like long before I ever had my first drink, and which is kind of unusual, I feel like, these days, because alcohol is so prominent in our society. But
yeah,
one thing that got me drinking alcohol a lot more was, first of all, turning 21 back when that happened years ago. And alcohol became a lot easier to access. And then I felt like I had to stop smoking weed because I was getting like these drug tests for work and stuff like that, and for like internships in school and everything. So I ended up doing like my drugs essentially seasonally. So I'd be like 8 months off and then like 3 months on or 4 months on, just because I never really knew when the drug test was, but I knew what season it was going to be in, like relatively.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. And I mean, how old were you when you started smoking weed? Just directionally, were you a teenager?
My first time was when I was 16. It was actually weed from Belize on a cruise ship.
Weed from Belize. Wow, that's gotta be nice.
But I didn't really start like doing it more regularly till I was 18.
Okay, and you mentioned kind of culturally. I mean, you don't have to get specifically into what culture you grew up in necessarily, but just culturally, how did you grow up with your family? I mean, did they tell you weed or alcohol was the devil or bad for you, or how did that work growing up?
Yeah, so they just told me not to do any drugs. And I mean, like, they still don't know that I do any drugs, but they were especially strict on alcohol. I don't know why. I don't know, like, if it was just like some personal thing or like some things that they've seen growing up, but they just really never had alcohol in the house. They never drank, and they really wanted me to stay away from it, even when I had friends in high school who were drinking and stuff.
Really? That's funny. I mean, why do you think that is? Is it for religious reasons that they didn't do it or something else?
I think part of it's religious, but I think another part was just that it's a lot more accessible. Like, yeah. Well, at least at the time, rather as a teenager, like it's probably easier to get a hold of some alcohol than it is some drugs, right?
And I guess, what do you think would happen if they found out you had done weed? I mean, again, is that more, are they theoretically against that because of religious reasons or just culturally, they just never grew up with it?
Honestly, I don't think they'd care that much, if I'm being real. Like, Just because, I mean, I turned out fine, and I never, like, abused it as a teenager or anything. I definitely abused it later in life, but I don't think they would really care that much. They might be, like, surprised, but that's about it. But they would actually care if I drank alcohol. Like, they would actually be like, what the fuck?
That's amazing. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, growing up, you know, I'm Jewish, and, you know, we would have wine during Jewish holidays, and obviously my parents drank pretty much all the time. I mean, they never were like, here, have some wine. But, you know, all my friends drank, and we drank in high school and all that. And, you know, some of my friends did weed, but I never really got into that until college. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the prevalence of alcohol in American society is everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere, and it's accepted. And, you know, as part of the book, we did some market research, one of the companies I was working with did some market research. And, you know, it was interesting because a lot of the cultures overseas, specifically in Asia, were like, we can't even read this book because it's the topic of weed. Like, we can't even read it. It's evil. It's the devil. And you wonder where that comes from. And I assume that's just how they grew up.
Yeah, it's wild, man. We've got a few years on me. I don't know what it was like in even the U.S. with, like, Reagan and, like, you're not that old, I know. But, but like all that war on drug stuff that you always hear about, like, I can't even imagine what it was like living in the U.S. at that time, much less in other countries. Like, but I've heard some Asian countries have, like, legalized it, and, like, it's kind of taken over a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you heard about Germany this week. I don't know if you heard about that. They were trying to legalize it, and obviously Amsterdam. Europe, I think, is a little bit more progressive than Asian cultures. But I don't know, you know, I just could tell by the names as far as people that were responding to, you know, I'm not going to even read this because of cannabis. I don't know exactly what country they were for, but they were Asian, you know, some Asian background. So I don't know. But it just goes back to, you know, kind of the predisposition to kids growing up and whatever their parents kind of teach them. You know, either they accept it and don't question it, or they go completely opposite and try to do everything opposite of what their parents teach them. And it sounds like you did a little bit of both in a way.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I really wonder if, like, the U.S. kind of led the whole anti-weed thing, like, globally, or if it was came from somewhere else, just because it's wild to me how it's such a thing, especially, like, all over the world, for weed to just be taboo.
Yeah, and you know, in the book, I talk about a little bit about, you know, the history of weed and the fact that it's been around for thousands and probably hundreds of thousands and millions of years. It's a natural plant that existed, you know, during the time of the Bible, going all the way back to you know, pre-Bible times, and the fact that, you know, Jesus likely used weed to heal.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that.
Cannabis oil on some level. So it's just... And that's why we're doing this, and I assume that's why you're doing this and telling your story to get that message out there that, you know, it's not the devil, psychedelics aren't the devil, but, you know, it just takes time, and it takes a lot of repetition and education for people, you know?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And psychedelics are, like, especially a challenge, it feels like, because at least weed is legal in some places and stuff, but when it comes to, like, shrooms, LSD, DMT, et cetera, it's... Honestly, I've struggled a little bit to convince some people to even be open to the idea of it. But anyone who I know who's tried it, with a couple of exceptions, has loved it or just appreciates the value that it can bring, you know?
So especially
when you see all these new studies coming out of how it can help people with PTSD and anxiety, depression, et cetera.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree. So, I mean, to talk us through a little bit more of your journey then. So I guess in college you started doing a little bit more alcohol. When did you kind of start experimenting with psychedelics? And if so, you know, what types of psychedelics were you getting into?
Yeah, so the first psychedelic that I ever tried was mushrooms, and I just, like, ate them raw with a few friends. And I actually wasn't very open to doing psychedelics, but one of my friends just really talked me into it. He was like, hey, listen, like, we're just gonna try it one time. It's just something that you just gotta try at least once, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, fine. And then we did it, and we're like, dude, this is dope. Like, let's do this again. And I actually ended up probably like a semester or two after that first experience, I ended up rushing a fraternity. And so I was like a pledge for a semester. I don't know if you're familiar with the process, but pretty much I was like someone's bitch. People's bitch.
That's right.
And I was
Before you go on, I'm just curious, what was the worst thing they had you do? I got to know.
I think I don't know if this was the worst thing. It probably wasn't objectively, but the thing that personally fucked me up the most was I had to drink like half a bottle of vinegar. Oh. Man, I was not okay after that. I was throwing up for days. Like,
wow. Why? Just because?
I don't know, man. But, some people would say the worst thing that they had me do was, so I was the only one in like the frat who had psychedelic plugs, like people who were a way to get psychedelics. And the VP of the frat at the time got really into acid. And so he'd hit me up and he'd be like, hey, Reggie, come on, like, get some acid, let's go. And every weekend he would like essentially make me trip with him. And so I got super into psychedelics. I'm like, I didn't even want to at a certain point, you know what I mean? Because it's just like, okay, dude, like, this is like our third or fourth weekend in a row doing acid. Like, come on, man, I kind of want to have a sober weekend. Right, like, I got stuff to do.
Yeah, I got to study.
That's kind of what built my tolerance. Yeah, right, you got to study. It's crazy because, I mean, we were tripping during some like crazy football games too. And I'm just like, dude, like we're the only ones tripping right now. Everyone's drunk. Like I want to be able to drink with everybody. Like, cause that's the vibe, right? Or even smoke. But
that's amazing.
But yeah, no, I mean, it was good times, but that's kind of what got me into it. And then I think what really got me into psychedelics more is that it was one of the few drugs that doesn't show up or is even tested for on a drug test. So whenever all my other friends were like smoking weed and doing whatever, I would just take some shrooms or take some acid or hit a DMT cart, and at least I felt fucked up, you know what I mean?
That's all. That's true. I mean, one of my friends is an employment lawyer, and I've talked to him about the legality of testing for cannabis now as more states are legalizing it. And it's kind of a gray area. Like you can, but if it comes back positive, you can't really fire someone for it. So that's interesting that you decided to do that for that reason. I guess now you could still, I guess we're in the state that you live. Could you get fired if you tested positive for weed?
100%. Yeah. 100% could get fired. And they're kind of strict with it. The way they do drug tests is they'll start you off with a piss test, and then if anything is wrong with that piss test, if it's too diluted, or even like if the lab like messed up on their end, even, then no questions asked, they're gonna hair test you immediately. And I'm just like, that's so ridiculous, because even like a Department of Transportation drug test is just a 5-panel urine test, and they're not gonna hair test you. Like I've worked like jobs where I would have to take a DOT drug test, like that require literal dangers and like physical labor that I could hurt myself if I was high. And even they don't require a hair test. So I'm just like, it's ridiculous to me.
I would move. I couldn't do that. I'd be like, I'm out. I'll find another state to do whatever I'm doing. I mean, I hear you and I get it. And I'm sure there are a ton of people that live in states where that is an issue. And it's sad because it does restrict what you can do. I know plenty of people that are doctors or nurses that or whatever that would get fired if they got tested, and it's sad to some extent, right? Because you can drink as much as you want, no issue. But if you get tested for weed, it's you're done. And it reminds me in the book I spoke about that Olympic athlete, I think it was a couple years ago, where she got banned from the Summer Olympics because she tested positive for cannabis. I think her grandmother had died. I forget her name.
Wow.
And she got basically eliminated from the Olympics for a track meet. And I was thinking to myself, like, this is the stupidest thing. Like, if you're going to do weed and then go run an Olympic track meet, it's not going to help you.
Literally.
it's the worst thing you could probably do is smoke a joint before you need to go run, you know, a 10K or whatever. Like, it's not going to help you. It's not performance enhancing.
Yeah, man, we got to get with the times in this country. Like, just globally, like... It's ridiculous,
but going back to psychedelics, I mean, just talk to me a little bit, because I've never done anything other than weed. I want to try mushrooms at some point. I want to try ayahuasca at some point. What is the difference from your experiences between, you know, let's just say a normal kind of dose of shrooms versus a normal dose that you do of weed. What's the difference? What happens differently in your body, in your mind, and your experiences between the two?
Yeah, so they're actually pretty different. And I'm glad you asked about the comparison because they often do get compared. And I'd say, well, just to describe like the effects first and then kind of going into some of the differences, like for psychedelics, it's a lot more of like a euphoria in terms of like, it's kind of more of like a upper in a sense. Like you can't really sleep on it, unlike with weed. If you take enough, you'll get some nice visual hallucinations. You're kind of going to get in your head a little bit, but it's pretty chill. Versus from what I've seen, and I don't know what your experiences are like with weed, you know how weed is. Like you can either take an indica, sativa, or a hybrid or whatever, and you'll have those certain effects. But the thing with weed that I've seen is that a lot of people get pretty paranoid on it. And it's interesting that that gets brought up because a lot of people will go to me and they'll be like, oh, dude, like I would never do mushrooms. Like one time I like took an edible and then I like lost my shit. I got super paranoid. But the reality of the situation is I think weed induces more psychosis than mushrooms or LSD if you're just taking a regular recreational dose. And I've seen so many more people have like bad trips essentially on weed compared to mushrooms or acid. And it's just wild to me. And it's hard for people to understand that because, you know, weed's not typically thought of as a psychedelic, but I mean, it is, you know?
So, I mean, are there experiences that you have on psychedelics that you can kind of talk to us about? Because again, I've never done it and I've heard people talk about it. And again, they talk about euphoria a little bit, but is it generally it just makes you feel good and warm and fuzzy, or what are you kind of feeling and experiencing when you're on, you know, a nice dose of shrooms?
Yeah, I'd say like the warm and fuzzy good, that's more like MDMA. Like for as far as shrooms go, you could use them in different ways. I like to use them both recreationally and as like a productivity tool, not like to be productive on them necessarily, but to kind of plan things out. So depending on kind of what mindset you go into it with, people call shrooms and acid like placebo enhancers. So you can kind of amplify whatever feeling you're going into it with by using those drugs. So if you're in a great mood and you're taking shrooms, you're going to be in an amazing mood. And it's not really as physical. In fact, I would say that you almost detach from your physical body a little bit more. And if you take enough psychedelics, then you're going to experience what's called ego death, where in extreme cases, you can literally forget who you are.
Sounds great.
And like, you know, you don't recognize people around you. But, you know, in regular doses, you're probably not going to experience that. And it's really cool to even get close to ego death or even experience it, in my opinion, because it really kind of humbles you and it completely changes your perspective. I'd say the biggest effects of taking shrooms and acid are the increase in empathy and the decrease in ego that you get. And those things will just help you throughout your life, even like when you're not on those drugs. Like you will retain those benefits when you're not tripping, which you can't really say that about a lot of drugs, you know?
It's interesting you bring up the empathy part. My wife always tells me I'm not empathetic when I'm sober, but when I'm on cannabis, I'm very empathetic. And you know, a lot of the experiences that I talk about in the book are these connections or these downloads where I can sense in a real-time basis how other people are feeling, similar to an empath. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the experiences in the book that we talk about and we've talked about on the podcast are just these things that when I'm high, I've sensed or I've felt or I've thought that I'm like, wait a second, this isn't me. This is not how I normally think or feel. It's someone else. It's my wife or my kid. And so at first we were like, this is probably just a coincidence. But after enough times, we're like, something's going on here. I'm just curious if you've ever sensed something like that when you're on psychedelics where you've felt in a real-time basis how others around you are thinking or feeling, and you're like, wait, this isn't me, this is someone else.
Yeah, man, that happens all the time, especially if, oftentimes I'll get into some like really deep conversations with people And before you know it, I'm just crying my eyes out, just listening to people's stories. I'm like, you know, while sober, if I heard the same story, I wouldn't even shed a tear. But I just get so, I'm putting myself so much in their shoes that I genuinely feel for them whenever they tell me about these different things that have happened in their life or whatever the case may be. Yeah, it's a powerful thing, honestly. You should try it.
I'm going to have to, yeah. I mean, because I'm curious to see the difference between kind of my thoughts and feelings on weed versus shrooms and or any psychedelic. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about in the book is what causes that, what allows for that to happen. Again, some of these experiences, I'm not even talking to the person or looking at them. And I'll react or feel something when they're not even in the room. And I'll go ask him, like, were you just thinking this or feeling that? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, how'd you know? I was like, oh, well, I don't know. So one of the things I talk about is what allows for that. And the concept of the third eye or the sixth sense is something I wrote a lot about, that I feel like cannabis opens that up. And you brought up paranoia earlier. And one of the things that I theorized was that sense of paranoia is your mind essentially opening up and allowing for these connections to happen. And your body is like, what the fuck is going on? Like, something's happening, and your body basically becomes paranoid. Your mind becomes paranoid because it's not used to doing that. And I'm just curious if you've thought about that, if you get that deep into your thoughts and feelings, or if you've ever kind of thought about this, the third eye or sixth sense concept when you're doing these psychedelics.
Yeah, it's something that I don't necessarily think about too much whenever I'm tripping, just because you don't really want to be having thoughts of possible paranoia or anything like that, because you're kind of setting yourself up in a bad place at that point, or setting yourself up to have a bad trip. But I've thought about it a lot sober, especially whenever someone's going to try psychedelics for the first time, and people who are predisposed to certain things, I'm very cautious with introducing psychedelics to them. And the thing is, a lot of those people that I've met that are predisposed to certain things, or they're like, oh dude, I know myself, I'll like freak out if I take acid or something. A lot of those people smoke like every day. They smoke weed all the time. And I don't know if that's related or not, but it's just an interesting observation I've seen.
Well, can you expand that a little bit? Like, what do you mean by you're hesitant to have them try it? Is it just you feel like they'll just get too paranoid from doing psychedelics? Maybe something not used to? Or what would happen in your mind that you're a little hesitant?
Yeah, well, so you'll hear some people refer to psychedelics as like a placebo enhancer. And so it doesn't even really matter like what the physical effects of the drug are going to be on that person. If they're going to go into it with that mindset of, hey, like I'm going to be paranoid, if they're already telling themselves that, it's a bad idea to introduce the drug at that point. Because even if it's completely a placebo, the drug is going to, like it's going to amplify that. And that's the last thing you want, because then they are actually going to freak out. They might actually have a panic attack if they think they're going to have one, right?
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I haven't really thought about it that way. I would probably need to be in a good mood before trying it then. And I'm not suggesting, I have had a panic attack while high, I talk about in the book, but what I say is I don't think it was my panic attack, it was my son's. But again, I was able to kind of tap into that feeling of his, which resulted in me having a panic attack. So maybe I have to.
Oh, I could see that, yeah.
Yeah. Have you tried ayahuasca? I'm just curious.
No, it's on my list. I've tried DMT, though, which is like same chemical.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Ayahuasca like has something else in it to where it lasts like a really long time. So I just pretty much did it without that thing that makes it last a long time. So it only lasted like 10 to 30 minutes.
And what happened when you tried DMT? Did you have hallucinations or any sort of, you know, third eye opening, soul awakening vision or anything like that?
Yeah, man, it was pretty wild. I had definitely had an out of body experience. They call it breaking through whenever that happens. And I don't remember it super clearly, but there were moments where I was like completely in the water, like drowning, even though I wasn't. But in that, it's weird to explain. Like DMT is kind of like a peaceful thing, in a sense that I was drowning, but it was a peaceful kind of drowning. So I was super okay with it. And like enjoyed it almost and appreciated it. And then there was like other moments where like I felt like my head completely came off my body and I was like looking around the room from like an aerial perspective almost. But obviously those are like hallucinations. Like I wasn't, my head didn't come off my body, you know?
I hope not. That would be bad. Yeah, I may need to go to a doctor for that.
But I didn't have like the craziest trips like what I've heard some of my friends had that just broke through like crazy. And they were like messed up for like a week. Like, but really? In a good way, if that makes sense. They just had a different perspective for a while.
And you use the word breakthrough. What do you consider that? I mean, is that something where, again, when you think about just your mind, is it your mind opening up in a way that it never had before and kind of gives you a new perspective on life? Or what do you consider kind of a breakthrough?
Yeah, more or less. I'd say it's when you lose sense of your physical body. And so all of these hallucinations and things are happening and you completely forget about the actual environment you're in, right? So like you'll hear stories of people like ripping a bomb of DMT or a dab rig of DMT or whatever, and then just like slumping on the couch. But and then they wake up and they're like, oh man, I feel like I lived a whole lifetime. Like, like that's like a super out of body experience or like a super breakthrough type of thing.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I had an out of body experience, that kind of led to the writing of my book. And, you know, I talk about in the book and we've talked about in this podcast where, again, I just had a ton of negative emotion leave my body, one night, with my wife and we were kind of staying outside and eventually I was floating above my body. I didn't realize at the time, but we kind of talked about it on one of the podcasts where I felt like the out of body experience was my negative energy leaving my body. And that negative energy release kind of gave me the sensation of being outside my body for whatever reason. I'm just curious if you've thought that, you know, that could explain whatever out-of-body experiences you've had where it's just energy essentially coming out of your body. I mean, it happens in the universe. Everything in the universe kind of emits energy and accepts energy. I'm just curious if you've thought about it that way.
Honestly, I haven't really thought about it, but I could totally see that. If I'm being totally honest, whenever I take really high doses of psychedelics, I'm usually doing them like for fun, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, if I take a smaller dose, I'll oftentimes use that as a tool to like plan something out or, right, you know, do something productive. So whenever I'm just going into things for fun, like I honestly try not to think that much. Like in general, I just kind of enjoy the visuals and the different experiences that I'm getting. Sometimes it forces you to think a little too much, I will say, like, yeah, especially psychedelics, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the good things that came out of this is, you know, everyone thinks of people that smoke weed or consume cannabis or do psychedelics as just these people that have nothing going on in their lives or just idiots that, you know, don't have any responsibilities in life. And what I tried to kind of change the perception of that and say, look, I have a career, I have kids, I have a family, I have responsibilities. These things, these experiences that have happened to me, I tried to find reasons or meanings for them. You know, it happens. People, when they get high, they get paranoid. Some have had bad experiences when you use psychedelics. What is that? What could cause that or what could explain that? And, you know, if there is an explanation for it, can you study it to understand, you know, the benefits to it? And, you know, you mentioned some studies around psychedelics. I'm just curious, from your perspective, have you done any research into, you know, those studies around psychedelics and kind of the results of those in terms of the impact of the body and the mind? I haven't done any, so I'm just curious if you have.
Yeah, actually, I have a good friend, and we hosted him on our podcast, Modern Day Hippie, last week, actually. And he does... He works at a company in California that does like psychedelic research, essentially. And he creates the different like programs for people to be able to use psychedelics like at home, in a controlled environment as part of a research group without having to like always be going in to see a therapist and stuff like that. And it's super, they're making some really great headways over there. Like the results that they're seeing are insane, especially when it comes to treating different things like treating PTSD, treating alcoholism, treating addictions in general. And it's a lot of the research shows that like it only takes a couple of sessions, like one or two sessions, to for people to just completely like flip a switch in their brain and either quit their bad habit or like stop having PTSD or whatever it is. It's, and what it really comes down to at the end of the day is a change in perspective. Like once you start seeing things differently, then things end up being different for you, right? Like perception is greater than reality.
Can you say the name of the company, or you don't want to divulge that?
Honestly, I forgot which company. Okay. It'll be on our podcast, Modern Day Hippie, if you guys want to check it out.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out. I'm very interested in that. I think there's a ton of more research that needs to go into it. Obviously, a lot of stuff is not federally legal, Schedule 1. So the research ability is somewhat limited. From a federal perspective, there are obviously private institutions that can do it, but, you know, it's still hard. And I think there's still a lot that needs to be learned. We've talked a lot about the benefits of cannabis on myself and my relationships and just my life. What are the benefits from your perspective of psychedelics versus, you know, alcohol in your life or your relationships with the people that are close to you?
Yeah, so actually the difference in the way that psychedelics make me feel versus like alcohol is one of the biggest reasons that my co-host for our podcast, Yuki, and I started Modern Day Hippie, the podcast. And Yuki's story is actually, I think, a little bit more impactful than mine in that he used to be a complete alcoholic. And like we went to college together and he would be drinking all the time and it was bad. He'd be blacking out all the time. And then one day he went to a party in Cancun.
Of course.
Yeah. And just did a bunch of drugs and didn't drink, or maybe drank a little bit, but he realized that he was enjoying the drugs a lot more than he was the drinking. And then he was like, oh, alcohol is stupid. Like, I'm going to stop doing this. And when I say drugs, I mean like mostly psychedelics. Like that's what it was, mostly 2CB and mushrooms that he was doing and some ketamine. I don't know if you're experienced with any of those, but
not yet.
But yeah, so he kind of was a big reason that I like didn't stop drinking nearly as much, like, cause I never really drank that much. But I mean, like I said earlier, I was a frat. And so like there were, I did drink in college and stuff and even afterwards, but now I only really drink on special occasions. And Yuki, my co-host for Modern Day Hippie, was a big influence in that. And that he made me realize like, dude, just take some psychedelics on a weekend when you're at a party and like, you know, you'll, all the party lights are going to look cooler. You're going to be more sociable. Like it's more fun than like drinking and like not remembering what happens. Like you can have some really dope conversations on psychedelics at a party and you're going to remember everything that you talked about versus having the same conversation when you're drunk and not even remembering it the next day. Like, are you really forming connections at that point? Or are you just using it as a temporary social lubricant? Like,
I like that. I like the word. I like the phrase forming connections. I mean, that's what obviously Higher Connections wrote about and we're doing this podcast about, is those connections, because you really do, to what I was talking about earlier, become empathetic and want to understand people and want to connect with people. And, you know, I think in today's society, we're so divided because of social media or whatever, politicians, forming those connections is, I think, the best way to try to improve what's going on in this world. As stupid as that sounds, we just don't do enough of that. We're so disconnected from each other, and there are a lot of reasons for that. So I think those formation of the connections, I think, is one of the biggest benefits for me, and it sounds like for you guys as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. And we actually, within my friend group, we used to have a term that we called the shrooms bond. Whenever you do shrooms with someone, you felt like you had a special bond with them because you just understood them better after that experience. And I truly believe that, like, doing psychedelics, I think if politicians were to like meet with each other to try to resolve some conflict, if they both did psychedelics before walking into the room, they might actually like come to some consensus about things instead of just arguing, you know.
I say that exact thing in my book, man, so you should definitely read it, because that's exactly what I said we'd have world peace, environmental rules and regulations, healthcare for all. I mean, I totally agree with you. The way it's worked so far in society, just is, it's not working. So hopefully at some point it'll be accepted. People will do it, and we'll all start getting along. Last question here before I let you run. I mean, your generation, you're a little bit younger than me, I think. Do you get a sense that people in your generation are more open to legality? I mean, again, I know you live in a state that it's not, but do you get a sense from talking to people around you that, you know, it's becoming more accepted to do cannabis, to do psychedelics, and it's not stigmatized or won't be stigmatized as much?
Yeah, I genuinely believe that, like, most of the people I talk to that are my age and even that are older than me, like, I think it's ridiculous that weed is still illegal. And that even goes for psychedelics. Like, in the area I live, there's a decent military community. And, you know, a lot of veterans have PTSD. And there's actually people, like, at the VA that are telling, like, those veterans, hey, like, you should really try, like, psilocybin therapy or some kind of psychedelic therapy. And that could help. And it's really cool seeing that people aren't just open to, like, changing their mind about those things, but they realize, hey, like, these things aren't just good for, like, getting high, but they're actually good tools to solve real problems that people have. And people seem to, like, from the people I've talked to, it seems like a lot of people are way more open to that kind of thing. And yeah, definitely my generation thinks it's ridiculous that weed is still illegal.
Oh, that's good to hear. I mean, keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. You know, whoever's listened to this, whoever's listened to you, it's all we can do to kind of help spread the message of cannabis, of psychedelics, and it's not evil. It's not bad for you. You can still be totally functional and consume this stuff. And if it benefits you, if it benefits me, then it should benefit everyone. So I certainly appreciate the message and appreciate you joining me here. Reggie, just out of curiosity, where'd the name Reggie come from?
Have you heard of Reggie Snow?
Reggie Snow, I have not. But I'm older.
So I've actually only ever heard one song by him, and it's called Acid Trip. And it's just one of my favorite songs to listen to while on acid. And so whenever I was coming up with a surname, I was like, an alias rather, I was like, oh, Reggie. I'm just going to go with Reggie. But yeah, a lot of people think it's weed related, but not for me, at least.
All I know is Reggie Miller. I'm a Knicks fan, and Reggie Miller was the worst person from the Knicks back in the late 90s and 2000s. So that's the biggest Reggie I know. But I'll check out Reggie Snow. Well, Reggie, I appreciate you joining me, man, and thank you. And, you know, love to do this again with your co-host at some point. But I wish you luck and keep doing what you're doing. But thanks for joining me.
Awesome. Thanks, Eric.
And if you want to plug anything, go for it.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Hope everybody has a chance to check out Modern Day Hippie Podcast on YouTube. It's the one with the little smiley face icon. We're also on Spotify and all the other streaming platforms, so check us out.
All right, cool. Hope you check it out, man. Appreciate you joining. Take care.
Appreciate it.